So this is open for questions. Please, Dr. Chan.
Thanks. Very good talk. Your talk reminds me of a study. I think it's published in 2017. The last author was Rich Johnson. They followed prospectively a group of non-CKD patients, non-diabetes, non-CKD. Over 12,000 patient numbers. And they look at the occurrence of CKD stage 3. And they find a linear proportion to their serum sodium concentration. Even it's within normal range. So the sodium concentration ranges from 135 to 145. And you have a linear increase of CKD occurrence. So one thing with the heat is the the insensible loss. And insensible loss will immediately translate to blood sodium concentration. And so I wonder if there's a linkage between your study, if you're looking at either sodium concentration to see if there's evidence of extra water loss, or you can even test for the copeptin, which is really easy to test. And that's very good, reliable indication to see if there's a climate effect.
Thank you. That's a very good suggestion. I will check with Peter in the database to see what whether sodium data are available from those patients. I would assume they are in many cases, and so that, I think that would be a really nice next, a deeper dive into these results.
Please.
Thank you for your talk. It was very, very enlightening. And I just wanted to add that one aspect that we also forget with the increased CO2 emissions and the greenhouse effect is what follows the heat, which is a very, very cold, extreme, almost glacial stage that is, I guess, facilitated by the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but it is the case that greater swings of temperature are one of the hallmarks of a changing climate. And we see that, we've experienced that sort of, I think even this winter, with kind of strange extremes of cold. And in spite of a gradual sort of average warming temperature, but I'm not aware if you're implying that the climate that our understanding of the climate system suggests that in the future it'll keep getting warmer and then suddenly get colder. I mean, it's certainly an ice age can happen, but whether I don't think we know to what extent human-induced climate change is affecting the glacial cycles. I mean, it could postpone it, I suppose. That's a really interesting question. Did you want to expand it a little bit?
Well, it's when they study the deep layers of the Earth, when they dig into either the Arctic or Antarctic ice layers, they look at the amount of CO2 preceding the cold change.
Yeah. Okay. No, certainly. Yeah. So if you look, use cores to see how the climate has changed in the world over the last several thousands of years, there are these cycles, these warming and cooling cycles that are natural. I think we're, if I remember correctly, we're kind of overdue to going into an ice age. We're sort of at the top and it keeps going up. I think it's a fascinating question as to what, and it's a question that, our ancestors, the people that come after us will be particularly interested in knowing about. Yes, I'll take one more, and then I have some papers here to read as well.
Jens Tietze from Singapore, where it's very hot. Thanks a lot for the talk. The questions now are differences in serum sodium concentrations, and perhaps you, as a climate expert, might study that. But, we as a renal community We have people dying from kidney disease, and these are real epidemics, and they are in South America and they're in Sri Lanka. And they're associated with high glucose intake, low protein intake. Protein will result in urea, which is the basic component for water conservation and systems. And the reason that I stood up and asked a question was that this renal community here does not care, because we are interested in other things in renal management. We are not interested in anymore how a body conserves water. So do you think that you could give some incentives to the renal community, that the renal community as a research community starts taking care of the research that it has to do? Or do you think that it is upon us to transfer these research topics to you as climate experts and let you do the research?
That's a good question. It's a hard question. And I guess I would just fall back maybe to sort of a knee-jerk response, which is that I think only by communicating across the disciplines in a sort of equal way can we figure out what the most appropriate research is. And I don't have a preconceived notion of that, because I haven't had many conversations with people from this community yet, other than Peter, and we've worked a little bit on some of this, you know, dialysis data. So, you know, what are the key questions in that larger field, and what are questions that are interesting to your community that would also would benefit from the tools we have as epidemiologists and climate scientists? Those, I don't know the answers to those questions, but only by discussing it can we figure it out. Maybe let me know when we're running out of time, but let me read a couple from the audience. Should there be emergency plans in place to safeguard the population, including patients, against heat waves? Do such emergency plans exist? Yes, there should be, and there are. There are many cities that face heat-related health risks, particularly in the north. These are particularly cities in the northern United States have heat warning systems based on forecasting temperature extremes that are expected to occur within a day or two. There's a little bit of a gap between that technology that allows us to predict when a heat wave is occurring and figuring out how to protect the most vulnerable people against that. Because it turns out the people that die from heat waves tend to be elderly, well, at least in cities. This is doesn't address agricultural workers and people that work outside, but the sort of the typical person that dies from a heat wave in a city is an older person with chronic disease, at home, isolated, without a lot of social contacts. So how to protect those people during a heat wave, it's not at all clear, and I think that's an active area of research, and actually something I'm quite interested in. Another question is, what could be a reason for increasing AKI in a hot climate? Could it be just related to dehydration and be prevented by drinking more water? I think that's a good point. I think some simple preventative measures that have to do with hydration, but also avoiding sugary drink consumption, which I've seen in some of the literature seems to be a concomitant risk factor. And as you said, lack of protein. Do you want to say more?
Well, perhaps we could collaborate, because the community here believes that with drinking more you could fix the problem, but the water will simply flow away if you do not have the right osmolite at the right place, which is stored in the biological barrier, kidney, somewhere else. So it's again, a very renal topic. It's a rediscovery of osmolite metabolism that you then combine with a hydration concept. And again, I mean, perhaps climate change might be an incentive to start these research programs.
Yeah, okay, good point. I look forward to talking about that. I have a question about magnesium levels, which I assume was mixed in from the previous talk, so I'm going to ignore that one for the time being. And let's just see if there's anything else that relates
to... We just have 2 minutes left, so maybe pick out the best questions.
The rest of these actually... Any other questions? The rest of these are all related to bone metabolic disease and calcium and magnesium and something I can't answer at all, although perhaps you could if you're interested. But maybe since I don't see anybody standing up, maybe this is a good time to conclude. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Patrick.